My name is Nicholas Ivor Martin. I'm Lyric Opera's Director of Artistic Operations and Labor Strategy, and the topic of this commentary is Charles Gounod's best-known opera, Faust. The recording used in this commentary is provided courtesy of Warner Classics and features Richard Leitch as Faust, Cheryl Studer as Marguerite, José Van Damme as Mephistopheles, and Thomas Hampson as Valentin. Michel Plasson conducts the orchestra and chorus of the Théâtre Capitale de Toulouse. Every artistic field has its stars and its superstars. Christopher Marlowe may have been one of the great playwrights and poets of the English language, but if the Elizabethans had had Rotten Tomato scores and Amazon rankings, the numbers would show that Bill beat Kit in every measure of celebrity and success. Greek has Homer as its superstar author. Spanish has Miguel de Cervantes. Latin has Virgil. French has Molière. Italian has Dante Alighieri. The Venetians, who still do not consider themselves quite Italian, have Carlo Goldoni. These were men who were more than simply talented or well-known. They are recognized as holding a central place in the literature of their respective languages. Not every language has a single standout superstar. I could have said Victor Hugo instead of Molière or Proust. But there is little dispute about the German name on the list. It is Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Since we only have two epic poems by Homer, there cannot be much dispute about which of his writings earned him a place in the list of immortals. The same can be said of Goethe, despite his extensive resume, which includes such influential works as The Sorrows of Young Werther. Goethe is on the list because of Faust, his tragedy about a 15th-century doctor who trades his soul to the devil in exchange for knowledge and power on earth. The influence of Goethe's work on subsequent art and culture is nearly impossible to overstate. Just in the field of opera, there have been countless adaptations, of which the most notable were by Hector Berlioz, Arrigo Boito, and Ferruccio Busoni. I pick those three not only because of their success in appropriating Goethe's plays, but because they showcase just how many different approaches were possible, given the scope and complexity of Goethe's original. Goethe's plays investigated spirituality, mortality, science, sexuality, morality, psychology, history, and politics, among other things. Such a breadth was possible in part because of the sheer length of his work. A staged presentation of the complete text in 1990 lasted 21 hours. Operas are usually shorter, which means that composers and their librettists have to be more focused, a fact that is often reflected in their choice of title. Berlioz focused on spirituality, redemption, and philosophy, titling his 1846 opera The Damnation of Faust. He also changed the ending, since Goethe's Faust is rescued from hell by angelic messengers. Boito was drawn to the story's charming, sardonic, violin-playing bad boy, after whom he named his 1868 opera Mephistopheles. Busoni was interested in the intersection of modernism, science, and religion, a fact he emphasized by including Faust's academic credentials in the title of his 1916 opera Dr. Faust. There were even composers with last names that did not begin with the letter B who wrote Faust operas. Sergei Prokofiev composed The Fiery Angel in 1927. Igor Stravinsky premiered The Rake's Progress in 1951. In 1938, Gertrude Stein wrote a libretto for a Faust opera, Dr. Faustus Lights the Lights, but having never been set to music, it has instead been presented as a play. Stein was interested in Faust's relationship with the women of the story. And then there is Charles Gounod's 1859 five-act French grand opera. What about Goethe's sprawling epic of philosophy and universality attracted the 40-year-old French composer? Magic flowers. In the first act of the opera, after Faust and Mephistopheles have made their pact, we meet Cybele, a competitor with Faust for the hand of Marguerite. To help Faust, Mephistopheles puts a spell on Cybele so that any flower he touches will wilt. Frank Cursaro, the American stage director who for years headed the Actors Studio in New York, directed Faust at Lyric three times and has written extensively about the opera. After listing all of the composers who were so intimidated by Goethe's stature that they refused to attempt their own Faust creation, Cursaro writes, quote, Where angels feared to tread, there trod Charles-Francois Gounod. Goethe's story is a veritable mountain of a theme, ripe for the musical plucking. Gounod's opera is completely devoid of any of the philosophical or emotional complexities of Goethe, unquote. But as he continued, quote, Gounod's opera has held the boards for over a century. As a sentimental pastiche, it has few rivals. The opera eventually may have to be clubbed to death as an act of mercy, unquote. Or to paraphrase Corsaro, Gounod is the Disney version of Goethe's masterpiece. 19th-century German audiences agreed. When the opera appeared there, the idea of presenting it under the title of the master's epic was unthinkable, and the title was changed to Marguerite, the name of the opera's beautiful, tragic heroine. Amusing as this is, it's not fair to Gounod. It would take a composer of the stature of Richard Wagner to convince audiences that philosophy was a good topic for an opera. And it would take Wagnerite fanatics, when they weren't distracted by dragons, giants, dwarves, magic swords, and general operatic mayhem, to think that what Richard Wagner was putting on stage qualified as philosophy. Gounod's Faust, as Corsaro observed, has been a favorite with audiences for more than 150 years. It is the most successful Faust opera in the repertoire, period. Corsaro attributes this success to the prominence that Gounod's librettists, Michel Carré and Jules Barbier, gave to the heroine, Marguerite. But the real magic of Gounod's opera is in the music. That's actually the wonderful opening chorus of the opera's second act, the so-called Kermesse. Act one is less boisterous. It opens with a single word, rien, nothing, uttered by the opera's protagonist. Faust has been studying all his life and concludes that the value of dedication and learning is nothing. He decides to poison himself. I've suggested that Gounod's libretto is lightweight compared to Goethe's play, but the Frenchman's protagonist might have been more cheerful if Gounod had not read the play at all. Goethe did not invent Faust any more than Gounod did. Faust legends date back at least to the 16th century, which was merely the first time they appeared in print. The legend may have been inspired by a real-life 15th-century doctor of theology, Johann Georg Faust, who dabbled in astrology and alchemy on the side. The name is interesting. In modern German, Faust means fist, but the name of the doctor likely derives from the Latin Faustus, which means good luck or of favorable omen. An early source makes the 15th-century doctor sound less than studious, reporting that, quote, being of a naughty mind and otherwise addicted, he applied not to his studies but took himself to other exercises, unquote. If true, here was a character with whom the French composer might have sympathized, having himself studied to be a priest and then abandoned it to go into the theater. Goethe's Faust is an old man, making his despair more poignant. He's not some student who needs a night out after studying for finals. He is concluding that his life, which is nearing its close, has been wasted. It is this that helps the devil, who now appears to Faust, seal the deal. Mephistopheles is not just promising Faust the attentions of one of the girls he's heard singing below his window. He's offering him a second youth. He does this by having Faust drink the poison, now transformed into an elixir of youth. Whether or not Gounod was interested in all the symbolism here, it's worth pausing to notice. Faust takes poison, which should kill him, but instead makes him young again. Death and rebirth, or resurrection, is an obvious metaphor for a story about Christian redemption. The way religion figures in Gounod's opera is interesting, but we'll get to that later. There's also a lovely moment in this act when Faust and Mephistopheles are about to sign their deal. Faust wonders what his rebirth will cost him, and Mephistopheles answers, presque rien, almost nothing. So according to Mephistopheles, Faust's immortal soul is worth less than his life, which he presumably heard the doctor valuing at nothing at the beginning of the opera. But off to the party, or in this case, the county fair. I mentioned that the second act of the opera is known as the kermesse, but there's an English translation for the word, although it's been all but forgotten. A kermesse is a summer fair or carnival. The word comes from Dutch, where it derived from two other words, kerk, meaning church, and mis, meaning mass. A kermesse, or church mass, was therefore originally not just any party, it was the celebration of the dedication of a new church. There's a famous Bruegel painting called the Kermesse, or the Peasant Dance. The subjects of the painting are shown drinking, dancing, overeating, and committing various other sins, all but unaware of the large church at the back of the scene. Gounod's opera, as we are beginning to see, repeatedly sets up what should be religious scenes, only to populate them with worldly characters pursuing decidedly irreligious activities. The scene in the opera is a party thrown by soldiers who are having one last romp before heading off to war. The patron of this particular party is Mephistopheles himself, who sings a lively song about a golden calf.
La sauce s'abrisse d'un bout du monde à l'autre bout. Pour fêter l'infamie dans le roi, ses peuples confondus, au bruit sombre des écus, dansent une ronde folle. Autour de son piédestal, autour de son piédestal, et Satan courut le mal.
The act introduces three new characters: Marguerite's brother Valentin, his friend Wagner, whom he asked to look after Marguerite in his absence, and a would-be suitor for Marguerite, Cybele. Cybele is on the young side. It's a so-called trouser role played by a mezzo-soprano, like Cherubino in The Marriage of Figaro, Niklaus in The Tales of Hoffmann, or Octavian in Rosenkavalier. Act II ends with Mephistopheles telling Valentin Cybele's fortunes. Both will die violent deaths. This is also when Mephistopheles tells Cybele that the young man's touch is henceforth lethal, to botany, a revelation that too many stage directors take as an invitation to have the props department construct arrangements of wobbly flowers. When Mephistopheles toasts the beautiful Marguerite, her brother indignantly draws his sword. Mephistopheles reveals his true identity by breaking the sword with a wave of his hand, and the act ends with the soldiers holding up the cross-shaped hilts of their swords to keep the devil at bay. If this sounds a bit silly, remember that Gounod was writing for an audience that wanted spectacle, not introspection. Spectacle in 19th-century Paris meant grand opéra, of which Gounod's Faust remains one of the best-known examples. Except Gounod didn't mean to write a grand opera, a fact which deserves some explanation. Gounod was born in 1818 into a very different world than had existed a mere decade before. By 1818, Napoleon Bonaparte was imprisoned on the Mediterranean island of Elba, and the European map was, more or less, that dictated by Napoleon's victorious enemies at the recently held Congress of Vienna. But in 1807, Napoleon was master of France, the Netherlands, Italy, Spain, and much of Germany. There was not yet any reason to invade Russia. He had taken them out of the war by signing the Treaty of Tilsit with Tsar Alexander in July. And England was under threat of starvation as a result of the French continental system and Russian adherence to it as part of the treaty. Napoleon therefore had some time on his hands, which he used to smack around the Parisian theatrical establishment. A decree of July 29, 1807, closed all but 9 of Paris's 35 theaters and all but 2 of its opera houses. The 2 operatic survivors were the Opéra, which was in its 8th location since its founding in 1671, and the Opéra Comique, which had been bouncing between 2 sites due to fires and mergers. In the days before websites and corporate logos, theaters differentiated themselves by the type of fare they presented. Whether this was in deference to the French encyclopedist tradition of formalizing everything, or the Napoleonic tradition of eliminating the competition, is unclear. The opéra was known for grand opera, which meant big spectacles with chorus and ballet, 5 acts, and no spoken dialogue. Performances at the Comique were not necessarily comical, but they did allow dialogue. Carmen, The Tales of Hoffmann, Lakmé, Pelléas et Mélisande, the Ernst Bloch Macbeth, and Berlioz's Damnation of Faust would all premiere at the Comique. Napoleon lived on until 1821, but defeat and imprisonment curtailed his direct influence over the opera establishment. New opera companies popped up all over Paris, and by 1852, the Opéra Lyrique had raised the money to open its own permanent theater and subsequently to commission Gounod's Faust. The operas at the Lyrique mingled the conventions of Grand Opéra and Opéra Comique, but favored spoken dialogue over recitative. Faust was therefore initially written with spoken dialogue, and without the ballet that would have been de rigueur at the Opéra. That Faust was not an immediate success at its premiere in 1859 led to the composer reworking the score for a touring production. The accompanied recitative we hear today, as well as the 5th act ballet, were the results of this retooling. Act 3 of the opera is in Marguerite's garden, where Cybele and Faust vie for her affections. Cybele's wilted flowers are no match for the box of jewelry Faust presents, as we hear in Marguerite's famous jewel song. Marguerite's Garden is the only one of the 5 acts in Faust that doesn't involve chorus, and the only one of the 5 acts in which Faust and Marguerite are, briefly, interested in each other at the same time. As Act 4 begins, we learn that Faust has already grown tired of and abandoned Marguerite. After Cybele assures her that he will never desert her, Marguerite goes to church, seeking redemption for the sin she committed in giving in to Faust. Instead of God, she finds Mephistopheles in the church, who tells her it's too late for redemption. Once again, Gounod uses liturgical cues, in this case an offstage organ and chanting priests, to paint a thrilling if horrifying picture. Puccini ends Act 1 of Tosca with Scarpia standing in the church of Sant'Andrea della Valle, fantasizing about raping Tosca, while around him the chorus sings a celebratory Te Deum, praising Napoleon's supposed military victory at Marengo. Leoncavallo has Santuzza struggle with her abandonment by Turiddu while the chorus offstage in church sings the Easter chorus. In both cases, the liturgical setting creates tension by its contrast with what is going on in the mind of the principal character. Gounod is doing something very different. His Mephistophele has usurped a church, taking the place of God. The act ends with the soldiers returning from battle. There is no more famous soldiers' chorus in all of opera. Valentin has learned about Faust and Marguerite. He challenges Faust, but in the ensuing fight, Mephistophele strikes Valentin down, fulfilling his own earlier prophecy. Valentin dies cursing his sister. After the Walpurgisnacht ballet of Dancing Devils that Gounod wrote later to allow Faust to be presented as a true grand opera, Act 5 continues with Mephistophele offering to Faust the most beautiful women in history. But now Faust can only think of Marguerite. After being abandoned by Faust, Marguerite has gone mad, suffocated her and Faust's baby, and is now in prison, awaiting execution for her crime. Mephistophele and Faust try to convince her to flee with them, but even in her madness, Marguerite recognizes Mephistophele for who he truly is. She rejects their help in a dazzling trio, another of the many melodies that redeem the opera from silly conventions. Marguerite prays for forgiveness and is transported to heaven by angels, leaving Faust behind. The music that you have heard is generously furnished by Warner Classics and is available for purchase on iTunes.